Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
And welcome into the Playbook. Sadly, for the final time in the 2013 regular season and the playoff run, I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino from PFW is kind enough to hang around for at least a little bit today as we put a bow around the 2013 season. This is always a sort of a bittersweet time of year for me, not only A, because football season is actively over, and it just comes to a crashing halt. You know, every year, there's no gradual letdown. It just comes to a screeching halt because you're going and you're blowing and you're doing things. And then all of a sudden, boom, season's over. And then there's nothing left to do. So this is sort of the step off of the ledge, I guess, more than anything else in terms of football for me and getting into the off season. And sure, I've got lots of stuff to do. Basketball is blowing and going as well right now. And then certainly baseball season will come up. But for those that have been, fans of the program who have listened, who have gained some knowledge, I hope, in listening to Patriots Playbook, over the course of not only this year, but the previous 12 years, because this was year 13 overall for us here in this endeavor on Patriots.com radio, then it'll be an off season. I hope that you'll continue to enjoy it. That's why I always stress the social interaction by throwing the Twitter and the Facebook handles out there, simply because love to stay in touch with you even during the course of the off season, especially when there's football news to be made. And I think we all know that there is football news that will be made. PFW guys will keep you up to date on everything Patriots on Tuesdays and Thursdays every week during the off season, especially around draft time. But in the meantime, we'll just get ready for next season, and we'll be back again, at least we're scheduled to be back on this program the Wednesday following Labor Day in September. So that's where we go. Mm. Kind of hard to believe that it's all come crashing to an end, but as I just said with the guys, Eric, I'm not terribly surprised that they lost this game this weekend. There was just too much Denver. There were too many offensive weapons. Their game plan was exactly as I thought it would be. Yeah. They came out just and blitzkrieged the Patriots, but they did it in a controlled sense, which never let the Patriots get comfortable with what they wanted to do. They imposed their will on New England. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the other way around. And we knew that the Patriots had to do that in order to win this game. That would be an uphill battle anyway.
Yeah.
And they never could, because their ball control offense was a thing of beauty to watch.
Yeah, Denver played with an energy that I think New England lacked for about 3.5 quarters. And it was to be expected, too, because I think they were operating on fumes to begin with going into that game. I mean, we'd been saying it for a while. We were at a loss to figure out how they were actually winning these games with all of the different players that they had to bring in and the bottom of the barrel that they were scraping to get guys just on the field at times in certain positions. And I just had a feeling that this run to me didn't feel like it was one of those miraculous ones like 2001, where I actually believed every week. Mm-hmm. I really believed that 2001 team, when they started getting into that playoff run, that they were a team that was meant to win. I didn't feel like this team had that. I really didn't. And that's why I picked the Broncos to win. And I actually gave the Patriots more credit in my prediction than they ended up doing on the field that day because of how they had played all season.
Right.
They had been so close and lost every game either on the last play or very close to the last play of the game in those few games that they had lost. So I thought that they were going to make more of a game of it, but they just didn't have the energy. They just didn't have, pardon the pun, the horses that the yep. Broncos did.
Yep.
And it was pretty obvious from the get-go, I think. I think most, sitting next to Fred, too, in the press box, we both kind of had a sense. I don't want to, speak for him, but there was a sense, I think, in the press box in general that even though the Patriots went 3 and out and then the Broncos went not three and out, but they had to punt on their first series.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell from those first two series which team had it more that day. And it
yeah,
was
but
obvious.
Six straight scores? I mean, wow.
Yeah.
See, to me, that was almost a microcosm of the entire problem that plagued New England all season long. Defensively, whether you want to go with the personnel matchups or certainly the injuries that plagued the defense, they couldn't get off the field on third down. And boy, you know, they needed to get off the field on third down against the Broncos, and they never could. And this is Tuesday, which means we will do some nitpicking here today. That's nitpick number one. The defense can't get off the field on third down. That has to be, it must be addressed in the offseason. Now, maybe it will be if Wilfork comes back and plays to, you know, to any of his previous level. If you have Gerard Mayo who comes back and plays to his previous level, maybe you go out and you get some reinforcements, whatever. That must be one of the priorities for the defense in the offseason, is to figure out a way to get off the field after third down.
True. And, you know, that's a great nitpick, certainly. Mine would be, I think, with the offensive line, because it was evident from the get-go that they weren't going to be able to run against the Broncos, and that changes.
Shouldn't we give Terrence Knighton and crew a little bit of credit there?
I mean,
they've been pretty decent against the run.
Yeah, they have, certainly, and you know, it's not like they were the Bills or even the Colts in terms of their rush defense.
Right.
They're a stout front, but I think you know, it was pretty obvious from the early going that the offensive line was not going to have it that day. They were just getting beat up all day long, especially against the run. And that changed, I think. That was the one thing that I thought if they could run the ball against Denver, I think they would have upset them, because they would have been able to control the ball. And as it was, the Broncos only put up 26 points. If New England had the ball longer and more often...
I thought the opening series of the game was important. I mean, Denver won the toss. Not much mm-hmm. you can do about that.
Right.
But then you get the first possession. You got to do something with it. You can't mm-hmm. go three and out when you're in enemy yeah. territory like that. You just can't do it. And
yeah.
they went three and out. And I thought that was a huge, huge immediate swing in
yeah.
mood and tempo and everything else about that game.
Especially in that stadium. And they were in the closed end zone to start out, where it's the loudest. And if you can shut up that Denver crowd, that's huge. And they weren't able to do it. If they had converted that third down, then the air would have come out a little bit. If they had a long sustained drive, it would have taken them.
I agree.
I said this at the time, John. I tweeted it at the time. The overthrown pass to a wide open Julian Edelman when they were down 3-0, no question would have been a touchdown. He was so far behind
the defense. Yeah, it was.
Would have just had to catch, turn up, and he was gone. That, to me, they were going to regret that play.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, yesterday, Tom Brady said, I hit that 9 times out of 10. That's all on me. And I wonder how that would have affected the rest of the game.
And I think
it would have done wonders to affect the
game. As you well know, throughout the course of this entire season, we have spent a fair amount of time, especially early in the year, criticizing Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And that was a perfect example of what happened earlier in the year to Tom. He was off his mark. Now, whether that was due to the inexperience of his, you know, younger receivers at the time, the Wookiees, as we like to call them, or whether or not that was just, thank you very much, Kevin, for that. I don't know how often much more we get to use that. So we might as well use it now while we can.
They could have used some Wookiees.
We could have used some Wookiees. Could have used a couple of them, I think, right? Defensive end, something somewhere, right? Thank you for a couple of Wookiees. We also made the point at the time, part of the reason that, you know, I'm sure I spent some time backpedaling from some of the assault online this year was, you know, my calling, you know, Tom Brady, you know, basically, well, I think we can see that the end is near. And I didn't say he was finished as a quarterback. What I said was is that he can't do the same things that he did 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And because he has inexperienced receivers, it only exacerbates the problem. And I think we saw a little bit of that because he was wide open, and that's a throw that 3 or 4 years ago Tom doesn't miss.
Even more egregious than the fact that Edelman was so wide open, first of all, it was a great play-action fake that Broncos bit completely. And this was early in the game when it's still, you know, the running game was still a potential threat, which helped. But the O-line had blocked so well on the fake. He play-actions and bootlegs out of it. John, there was no pressure. There was not even a Bronco within 10 yards of him. He had time to set and throw, and I think he saw Edelman wide open and just got wide-eyed and rushed the throw. That's a
play that you or I would make. We just overthrow the guy because we're like, oh my God, he's wide open.
Yeah. I think he just got so excited he forgot to, hey, set.
Throw
properly, and you hit that, and that's a completely different dynamic to the game at that point. You're up 7-3. First of all, you would have had a lead, which they didn't have all game.
Yep.
And you counter a field goal with a touchdown. I think maybe the end result would have still been a Broncos win, but I think the dynamic would have changed.
Certainly could have. Certainly could have, especially when you were fighting from behind like they did. And, you know, and then, of course, on the two-point conversion, I thought they sort of outsmarted themselves later in the game, you know, going for two to try to make it a one-possession game and going for the run there. I can understand why they did it. I just thought that they sort of outsmarted themselves.
With the play
call in particular.
Not that they weren't going for two, but with the play call?
Right, okay. Exactly. With the play call, you know, they chose run rather than pass, and, you know, Denver was ready for it.
They almost always, though, like to run little from the shotgun handoffs to whether it was Kevin Faulk over the years or Vereen. They like that play, and that play has given them success, so I can't really fault them for going to that well again because it's worked. They didn't block Sean Phillips. He came running in like Willie McGinnis in that fourth down in the RCA Dome.
Well, that is an ultimate nitpick for me today. That would be the other one. I just didn't like the play call. And then, of course, there was another one that can go, you know, right along
fourth
with
down
that.
One?
Yeah. There was, you know, third down and three, I guess it was, and they go deep up the right sideline in the first half. To Matthew Slater. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Shades of, you know, the bad Josh McDaniels. Bad Josh earlier in the year. I just didn't understand that play call at all.
Especially Slater or because it was third and three?
Both.
Oh, okay.
The combination of the two was lethal. Did it work? No, it didn't. Now, I'm not blaming Slater. I'm blaming the play call more than I'm blaming Slater.
Okay.
But when you look at it from a Broncos point of view, it's kind of like, ha, you guys can have that every day.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I just thought that was a ridiculous play call.
You can nitpick the pass blocking. Two significant plays when Brady gets sacked. One of them was on the fourth down that they went for, and I don't blame them at all for doing that because they were down 20-3, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They had no spark on either side of the ball.
Nope.
If you pick up that first down, now you might be, you know, you might infuse some energy in your team. I don't blame them for going for it, but boy, Logan Mankins whiffed on Terrence Knighton, giving him a swim move. And Brady, I think, was just stunned to see that there was pressure coming up the middle from him from there, and bad job of the O-line. They were my big nitpick.
Okay. Well, that's fair, and I think that, you know, they sort of were off kilter most of the year. I know they certainly had some injury problems that they had to deal with all year. I think we had some underperformance worries that we had to.
Not too bad, John.
No, it wasn't awful.
Mostly
I mean,
they did lose
Vollmer for about half the year.
They did, and that was a big loss, but 4 out of 5 guys for pretty much every game.
You can make the argument, and we did make this argument several times, that they underperformed in a lot of ways. Ryan Wendell at center, I mean, he had some good games. He also had some poor ones.
He's a free agent, by the way.
I'm not sure that he's going to be one of those that will be asked to return. He might be, but certainly not at the number that I'm sure he's looking for. And that also kind of leads me, Eric, into one of the other things that I want to ask our fans today, because this will be the last time that most likely we'll get a chance to talk in this venue until next September.
Until the team is already assembled,
until the team
basically.
So what I want to ask is, number one, on top of your nitpicks today, being a Tuesday, and certainly want to give you a chance to either vent, if you have some venting to do, I want you to, you know, look back on the season and tell me what you can appreciate about this season, because we do, you know, sometimes look at the glasses half empty a lot of the times, and I understand, you know, and hey, we get hammered for it sometimes, you know, whether or not we're too negative or whatever, but frankly, you know, we just don't wave the pom-poms as much here as other programs wave the pom-poms, which is fine too. There's got to be a balance and a counterbalance to everything in life. You can't, you know, your mom probably told you too much candy is going to give you an upset tummy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of what it is here.
Chocolate cake in my case.
Chocolate cake, yeah, to me it was Twinkies, so, you know, and I'm so happy that, you know, somebody bought the Twinkie brand and they're back on the shelves.
Can I tell you, I got to digress as we are wont to do.
Yes, yes.
I got a Twinkie maker in a Yankee Swap.
How do you make Twinkies?
They gave the recipe book, and they had a little like.
So you're making the sponge cake, and then you got the thing, and you shoot it
filling,
full of cream.
Yeah,
and,
boy.
Come on.
I haven't done
Where
it yet.
Where are
but
they?
I haven't done it yet, but I have to try to perfect the art of it this offseason.
Well, then you're going to have to bring some in.
I will, and I will make sure that Miss Robin gets some.
Okay.
For
well,
the,
I was about
cranberry
to say,
bread that she made for me.
Very
if
true.
I can perfect the Twinkie. They have even have a do you like red velvet cake?
Love red velvet.
They have red velvet Twinkies.
Come on. You know what the mic
That's
you
what I'm going to make.
Do you know what the absolute bane of my existence is right now?
Fried Twinkies.
No. Well, that's a good one. If I were living in Texas, I could get those at the Texas State Fair. Red velvet whoopie pies. Oh yeah. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
That's not even fair. That's why Robin has to be with me when we go to the grocery store, because she knows that I will veer that direction.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and I'll try to sneak a couple in the basket. Oh,
Nope.
Not going to do it.
Yeah.
Red velvet whoopie pies?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So I'll try to make
what
some
brilliant
red velvet
genius
Twinkies.
Came up with that, you know? That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Good man.
That's awful, though. I mean, just look at it. That's 400 calories. Just look at it. It's 400 calories. Eat it. It's probably another 400 on top of that. So that's all I can say.
Well, here's what you should do. You should eat it while running away from Robin, who's going to be mad at you for getting it. That way you're working it off while you're eating
it. That's probably not a bad idea. She can't trust me.
It's funny because she's fat.
That's right. I'm not. I'm in good shape. Stop that. Stop that. You know I am. Well, what are you going to play now?
That guy in a little coat.
Thanks so much. All right, because this is the final program, the final playbook of the year, we thought it appropriate to welcome in the one and only Russell S. Baxter, pro football guru extraordinaire, who's been with us mostly on Thursdays throughout the entire NFL season. And, Russell, thanks for taking some time out of your schedule on what's supposed to be an off day, or I guess a non-show day. But thanks for being a part of the show all season long. And, you know, damn you, you had to be right about this one.
Well, first off, I have to say I've had the opportunity to go back on the podcast the last couple of days. And my daughter, Helen, my six-year-old beautiful daughter, Helen, thinks that, hello, my name is Russell. It's the funniest thing she's ever heard.
Kevin, do we still have that cut somewhere?
You don't have to play again. Right. She'll make me play it three times in a row.
Love it. I absolutely love it. Well, that's good. So I'm glad that your daughter, you know, appreciates that just as much as we appreciate you. What were your thoughts overall, really, of the AFC Championship game? Did it play out anywhere close to the way that you thought it would, other than the original or the final score?
I thought it was going to be a 10-point game, and I thought it was going to be a game that was going to be a little more back and forth, something like a 31-21, a 34-24, in which Denver took an early lead, and, you know, they were never quite comfortable, but ahead just enough that they had, but still sweating it. And it didn't quite unfold like that. But I think the thing that stood out to me the most, besides the fact that Denver, you know, 500-plus yards, 35-44 time of possession.
Yeah.
No turnovers. They didn't fumble the ball at all. No sacks allowed. Peyton's not been sacked in two playoff games.
And those were two huge factors against the Patriots in that one.
Right. And the thing that I don't know if the word bother is the right word, John, but it seemed as if, I mean, I thought going into the game, both teams wanted to do the same thing. And it seemed like every possession for New England, at least in the first half and probably through the first three quarters, when they came off the field on third down, they looked like a team that was, oh boy, we're not going to see the ball for 5 or 6 minutes again. I'm doing that strictly on a look-see and body language, but it was almost every three and out for them, it was overly demoralizing.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the Brady face early.
Yeah.
Didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, even early on when they went, you know, when they had a quick possession, it was almost like, all right, well, I guess I'll see you in the second quarter. You know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but, you know, Denver did exactly what it did when it played San Diego the week before.
Very true. Very true. I thought overall that, and we talked about this obviously off and on throughout the entire season while we look at, you know, the schedule of each week's games, but I thought overall that, you know, this has been some criticism that has, you know, come our way over the course of the last few weeks as to whether or not, this season, this team could be appreciated for coming up short. And it, ultimately, it did come up short. But when you consider some of the obstacles that were overcome, eight players on IR, all of them at one time a starter or at least a named starter on this team, and for them to end up in the NFL's version of the Final Four, part of what we're doing today is trying to appreciate what this squad accomplished. Because, again, over the last 2 years, this team has gone from one of the oldest in the league to one of the very youngest in the league. And so for that metamorphosis to take place and add injuries on top of that, for them to get to the Final Four, I think is an extraordinary compliment to the organization and the football staff, just in terms of keeping them competitive and trying to build something and beyond. What are your thoughts?
I couldn't have said it better myself. And I know I throw out these numbers all the time, but, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, 13 straight winning seasons, 11 straight seasons of 10 or more wins, regardless of who's on the field. I mean, you could make a case. You know, I've said this to somebody a couple of days ago. This was not a great season by Tom Brady.
No.
But I thought it might have been a great season by Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
And I think what Bill Belichick did this year was reflected on the field by Tom Brady. But I think it was one of Bill Belichick's great... I mean, they're in the AFC Championship game again, and how many times during the season every time they lost the game? Which, by the way, they didn't lose a game during the regular season by any more than 7 points. Although it was funny because they lost this one by 10, but it felt at times like more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But weren't you just waiting? I mean, I'm sure there were people out there just waiting. When the Patriots had that surge late in the game, oh, they're going to pull this out. When it was 20, even when it was 23-3, 20 points, three touchdowns, is it possible?
Yeah. Well, I have to admit, the thought crossed my mind.
Well, the thought crossed my mind, too, because when it comes to the comeback, and the Patriots remind me of the 70s Cowboys with Roger Staubach.
Mm-hmm.
If you were playing against the Cowboys, that game was not, and I know this sounds cliche, but that game was not over until it was said 0:00.
Mm-hmm.
You could never take anything for granted. And that had a lot to do with Coach Landry and Staubach and the will of the players. The will of the Patriots is what it is, and it's reflective of their coach. How can you not be impressed with what they did? I mean, I understand they haven't. We get so jaded, I think, as fans, of certain teams because you expect year in, year out. I know talking to on Twitter people, for instance, the Pittsburgh Steelers are 8-8 the last 2 years.
Right.
But would you rather be 8-8 after being 6-3? Or would you rather be 8-8 after being 2-6?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's two totally different things. I think the thing that surprised me the most about the perception of the Pats this year is when LeGarrette Blount, and obviously, you know, they went wild in the playoff game against the Colts running for 234 yards. But you kept on hearing this thing about, oh, the Patriots are now the ground and pound. I mean, the Patriots were top 10 in the league in rushing last year, much less this year. They were 7th last year. They were 9th this year. I think the metamorphosis of this team started to begin last year. And I think the shame of what happened to them this year, and, you know, forget Gronkowski and Hernandez on the offensive side of the ball for a second. In the recent years, I think the stressing of offense is what derailed their defense, John.
Mm-hmm.
I think this year their defense was derailed strictly by injuries, and that was the shame of it.
Yeah.
Because I thought the Tommy Kelly pickup was good. I thought they had the makings of a really excellent defense. And unfortunately, you just can't lose that many key components. There's only so many fingers you can put in the dam. And, for the first time in a number of years, this was a more balanced team. This was more of a physical team. And it's just a shame that what happened to them in terms of defensive. I mean, listen, you get beat on defense because you get out-executed and outplayed. It's one thing. But when you see a team kind of, and it's happened, it happens to other teams, when you see the team kind of crumble around, kind of like the Bears this year.
Yeah.
On defense, you know, it's kind of like how many things can you really overcome? The sadness of the situation in the league right now is years ago you could have depth, now you don't.
Yeah, and that, obviously that's what everybody strives for is depth, and some are able to do that, and the healthier teams are the ones that clearly have the more depth at the end, and that's probably why you have these two teams in particular of standing, Seattle especially, because they seem to have most of it right now. Russell, what was your thought on the what Bill Belichick had to say yesterday about the Wes Welker pick play on Aqib Talib?
I can only give my own observations. And I know a lot of things have been said, you know, well, the Patriots do this and the, this do that. I would like to give the benefit of the doubt to Wes Welker. There was no intent of injury. Mm-hmm. I don't think Bill Belichick was saying the intent was injury. I think there's a difference between saying cheap shot, and there's a difference between saying injury.
Right.
You can cheap shot somebody, but not intentionally hurt them.
Right.
Okay. I think that's two totally different things. But I will also say, and I'm only guessing in this regard, that if Eric Decker or Demaryius Thomas or Julius Thomas had thrown a similar block, I don't know if we would have, I don't know if Coach Belichick would have been as, I can't say he's upset, perturbed, whatever. You know, we can't ignore the fact that there's a little history between Wes Welker mm-hmm. and Coach Belichick over the last few years, and then especially with his departure this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all human beings, and I think, I'm sure that it had something to do with what he had to say yesterday. I don't know how much it had to do with, and I could be totally wrong. I'm only guessing and giving an opinion, and my opinion is based on being a human being, which I think sometimes Coach Belichick doesn't get any credit for being.
Yep.
Okay? I think unfortunately his critics outweigh his supporters sometimes, which is a shame, because we judge the person on what we see on TV because he gives very regimented answers. I mean, we don't know, okay? Unless you know Coach Belichick, you don't know what kind of a person it is. I learned that lesson a long time ago about people, and I certainly learned it about a coach, and it's just a funny story. I remember being at the Pro Football Hall of Fame when Bud Grant got inducted, John.
Mm-hmm.
And now, anybody who watched the Minnesota Vikings and saw Bud Grant, you probably never heard him say a word.
Right. Mm-hmm. He was as stoic as they come.
The Iceman, for not just because he was in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Well, I would say of the 20-something times I've been to the Hall of Fame, he had one of the most moving and emotional speeches that I ever heard there. Talking about his father, talking about everything. He was like a kid in a candy store. And you're like, Bud Grant?
Mm-hmm.
This is Bud Grant? This is the Bud Grant that we know from a television screen. Okay, so we don't know, you know, we don't know what, you know, and stuff. So I'd like to give Coach Belichick a lot of credit. I also think, again, it's that had to be an emotional thing for him. You never want to see a player get hurt. It was the second year in a row that Aqib Talib had gotten hurt in the championship game. And I'm just guessing because it happened to be on a block, but I'm not going to even say hit. I was going to say a block by Wes Welker. That maybe, just maybe, it was a kind of a sensitive subject for him. I could be spot on wrong, and if I'm wrong, I apologize.
Well, Russell, everything you said I think would be accurate if those statements were made by Belichick in his post-game remarks, where the emotion was still raw, where he hadn't had a chance to go back and look at the film, where it mm-hmm. was still in the heat of the moment. The fact that it came, what was it, almost 10, 12 hours later.
At least.
Right, after he'd watched the film, after he'd gotten a chance ostensibly to get some rest and to, you know, have his emotions, you know, level off a little bit, that made it all the more surprising that he came out with such an even stronger statement than he would have made, or than he did make, in his post-game remarks
mm-hmm.
about it. I think all of that, what you said, would apply if those were post-game remarks. These were a day later, after he had a chance to look at it. And also, I want to point out, not only was it a day later, but the so-called one of the worst plays he's ever seen happened just, and I'm going to count here, 5 plays after his receiver, Julian Edelman, launched himself at Dominic Rogers-Cromartie and took him out of the game on the exact same type of play. It was actually even a worse play because Edelman took about 3 steps and jumped and launched towards Rogers-Cromartie's head, neck, torso area after, I forgot who caught it.
Austin Colley.
Austin Colley had caught the pass and was coming across the middle. So to say that Welker's play was one of the worst he'd seen, little short-sighted considering that an even worse play happened five plays earlier.
I'll be honest, my whole thought here is that I think this is just a tweak of the nose yet again at the National Football League by Bill Belichick, that there's something in there after he's had the chance to sit here and sort of think about it, as you said, for 10, 12 hours, whatever it was, after the post-game remarks. It's because he's a stickler for the rules, his interpretation of the rules are such, and the NFL is telling him one thing, and so he's basically pointing out that this is a, I think this is a fallacy of the game. And so I think he's like, you know, that was one of the worst I've ever seen, is an intent to say, basically say, you know, you're going to make this call on us, and yet you don't make the call earlier in the game, and then it's a double standard. And I think he's striving perhaps in some small way to try to even it things out and at least get everybody on the same page. Now, I don't know.
You know what? That's a great point, John, because he was all, after he said what he said, he also did end it by saying, I will let the people in the National Football League
right decide on punishment.
It's kind of like a call to duty there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I don't know, and I'm sure that there had to be some reference as well the day later, after as it came, to the pick play on who, man, on Ho'omanawanui, when that should have been a call to penalty on Denver on the other side as well. So, and it was not. So I'm guessing.
But how is he?
I mean, I'm sorry. It's the other way around. Hooman was the one that was
flagged.
Involved in the pick, right? He was called for the pick.
He was called for.
He was called for the pick,
right.
And Welker was not.
Welker
and so
was not.
There's still a okay. So if you're going to call this one, you're not calling the other one.
But I'm not so sure that Bill was complaining that there wasn't a flag. I think he was more upset that his player got injured on the play, and that there was that
well, I'm sure he was upset at that, but I think he's also making a statement on the inconsistencies in officiating in the NFL. And
possibly, you know,
he loves to rub against the NFL when it comes to interpretation of rules. We've seen that time and time and time again over the last 13 or 14 years.
Yeah,
and I really believe that strongly.
I think Bill Belichick, I agree with both of you actually, and that's not a cop out answer. I think you just saw Bill Belichick do the ultimate multitasking. He covered all his bases.
Plus, he also began the contract renegotiations with Aqib Talib.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
Really? Think about it. Absolutely. Well, the negotiation has already begun.
It is a shame that he has been knocked out of the last two title games. I mean, I think, you know, obviously we saw Joe Flacco and Peyton Manning take sole advantage of that right away. But again, it was so interesting because you still kept on waiting for them to pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
And at times I thought, maybe. But as was a kind of a theme of the whole game, when they had a failure on third down or they had a failure on fourth down, when they had that failure in the two-point conversion, once again, you just kind of felt all the air come out of them. And, I think the Patriots owe a great debt to Elmer's glue and scotch tape, because that was basically how the team was put together by year end.
Yeah. It was a MacGyver season.
Yeah.
They were held together with all that and duct tape.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. Wow.
And they ran out of gas. You know, we were saying, John, you and I thought that they would be running out of gas sooner than that, but the fact that they got that far, I thought it was going to be asking way too much to go to Denver, where even in good years, it's hard for any team, including this one, to win in that stadium, in that city. Just was asking too much.
Yeah, I suppose it was. Nevertheless, it's still going to end up being a little bit of a downer for Patriots fans, a little bit of a downer for, you know, New England fans overall, sports fans in New England. They gave it the good old-fashioned fight. It wasn't meant to be. And, now I guess, and part of the question that we're asking today. So Russell, before we ended here, I will pass this on to you as well, get your thoughts. But one of the things that I'd love to hear from fans today is what do you feel like is the most important free agent need or most important pickup? Let's not even limit it to free agency. Although if there's a free agent out there you'd love to see them get, I'd love to hear from fans today. But what's the most important? What is job one this off season for the New England Patriots in terms of personnel? Where do you fix this team? Where do you make this team better? And someone could simply say, get Rob Gronkowski healthy. And I would not terribly disagree with that. But if you're going to look at both sides of the ball, offense versus defense, seeing where the improvements have come at least this year before the defense had to take a step back because of the injuries and such, Where would you target? What would you target in the offseason? What does New England need to do to make this entire program better to bring this team back to this level next year?
I think it's addressed the defensive tackle spot. Because regardless of Vince Wilfork returning next year, which obviously is, he also has 10 seasons under his belt already.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Kelly's not a young player either, should he return. You know, they tried like crazy, but, and losing Gerard Mayo hurt. So I'm not saying you have to, you know, bolster, spend all your money, spend all your draft picks on defensive tackles and inside linebackers. But I think that this is a football team that will always find ways with their philosophy, their quarterback, and their imagination on play calling, for lack of a better word, because there is no set game plan with the Patriots. Preparing for them is a nightmare because everything is always different. And I have to point out the fact that they wound up third in the league in scoring this year when all we did for most of the year is say, how are they going to generate points? Now, Denver blew everybody out of the water, John, as you knew, by scoring 606 points, but the Bears were second at, what, 445, and the Patriots at 444.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for a team that didn't have its weapons, they found ways to put points on the board. But I think a little more youth on defense at the defensive tackle spot is an area to go for. And youth at the defensive tackle spot, you know, can really pay off. Defensive tackles aren't instant sensations. They're kind of like wide receivers, learning the intricacies of inside line play, learning the intricacies of not getting held, learning the intricacies of stunts. You know, rare is an Ndamukong Suh who comes in and has a rookie year like he had. And the edge rushers are different. You know, I think the Patriots have one of the best defensive ends in the league in Chandler Jones. But to groom somebody behind Vince Wilfork to add some depth, I think that's the area I would address in the offseason. Is not necessarily defensive line, but specifically defensive tackle.
Yeah, tackle. You know what? I don't think that there's going to be an incorrect answer to this question. I would tell you that in my estimation, seeing as how this team struggled mightily earlier in the year in terms of, you know, all getting on the same page offensively, I'd certainly love another go-to guy that Tom Brady can target as a receiver. I don't think that will be a high priority at all. I think it'll probably be more like what you're telling me, but one of my favorites is going to be one of my favorite players in this league is going to be a free agent. Mm-hmm. And that's Anquan Boldin. I love the guy. I thought he's been a fantastic receiver. He's probably too long in the tooth to do anything about it now, but that's a guy, that's the style of guy, a guy that can go get a ball, not mm-hmm. wait for a ball to come to him. That's what I think is crying out for Tom at this stage of his career in this offense.
I agree with you. I think a wide receiver is a big one.
I think he needs. I refer to Anquan Boldin as Wes Unseld.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just, you know, I thought him and Joe Flacco catapulted the team to the Super Bowl, the Ravens, last year. And it all kind of started in the second quarter of the wild card game when they started playing pitch and catch because. Anquan Boldin is going to put himself in position to fight for the football. If it's going to be a start, that's why the matchup with him and Aqib Talib in last year's AFC title game was so critical.
Mm-hmm.
Because Talib was one of the few guys who could probably handle or at least give Anquan Boldin a fight. And it would have been, you know, a knockdown drag out. Okay. I know you can say Richard Sherman as well, and I'm not disagreeing with that. We're strictly talking New England here.
Right? Right.
Anquan Boldin helps any team because he helps any quarterback specifically.
Yeah, and like I said, to me, it's very simple to see that Tom, at this stage of his career, I'm not saying he's bad. Don't get on me about that. I mean, because fans have done that already this year. But I would tell you that at this stage of his career, where he does have a slip up, more often than he used to, and mm-hmm. there's a great example of that, and missing a wide open Julian Edelman in this game against Denver last week.
Mm-hmm.
He needs a guy that can go get a ball, and Boldin is one of the few guys, and maybe the only free agent out there, that you know will go get it in all kinds of traffic, no matter where it is. That's a guy that will go get it and won't wait for the ball to come to him. It's just that simple.
Well, bringing in someone like an Anquan Boldin also can only make Aaron Dobson and Kembrell Tompkins and some of the young receivers better as well.
I agree with that.
And that, you know, this offseason, the rapport that's going to, you know, hopefully be built with Brady and those young receivers, will start to develop. I mean, they had their share of, on the job training last year, and I expect that obviously the two of them to be better, and some of the other young receivers as well. But bringing in somebody similar, if it's not Anquan Boldin or it's somebody similar to that, and I don't know how many guys are really similar to that, would be an ideal situation. It was a shame that Adrian Wilson didn't stay healthy for the Patriots this year, because he was another guy. He's like an Anquan Boldin on defense.
Yeah. Yeah, in a sense.
The way he was playing, though, Russell, in the preseason, I'm not so sure he would have been able to do all that much this year.
No. I totally agree with that, Kevin.
It's Eric.
Style-wise, maturity-wise, leadership-wise. Okay? Obviously, the body was not willing. And that's probably one of the reasons the Cardinals, let him go.
True. And the Patriots also knew that, they were taking a chance on a guy like Adrian Wilson anyway.
Absolutely. Listen, when a team lets go of a prominent player like that, there's usually, do you remember years ago when there was the expansion draft and nobody could understand why Tony Piselli was put on the list?
Yes.
By the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Yes.
We found out pretty quickly why.
Yep, absolutely.
In that sense, I didn't want to confuse you, Kevin, with what I was saying. What I'm saying is I'm talking about style and maturity, almost like an assistant coach on the field.
Right. It's Eric, by the way. It's Eric in studio today.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. Well, that's because they do sound alike. So
that's unfortunate.
No, it is. It totally is. All right. So then, do you have a Super Bowl pick, Russell? Who do you like?
Well, I like Carmine's, like Thursday night, 9 o'clock.
Yeah. How about wait a second, before we get into your pick, how about the fact that they're turning Broadway into Super Bowl Boulevard in New York with a toboggan run and all this stuff that's going on out there? I don't know if you've read up on it or know what they're doing, but
yeah.
It's like 13 blocks worth of pure mayhem in the middle of Manhattan. Leave it to the NFL to be the only entity on the planet that can shut down Manhattan. You had terrorists that couldn't shut down Manhattan, but the NFL can.
Oh, it's not going to shut down. It's going to make it even livelier. And Carmine's is a great spot.
They better not block the entrance to Carmine.
That's a great spot. Yeah, right there.
Eric, when I used to work on the draft for ESPN, and the draft was on Saturdays and Sundays.
Yep.
At least 15 years. We had my brother and his wife would come in from Pennsylvania. Friends of mine would come in from Virginia, and we'd have dinner at Carmine's on about 8 o'clock Friday night, and that was what I call draft prep.
Yeah, fuel up for the weekend
for the draft.
Yeah.
There is nothing better than lining your stomach with Caesar salad and fried calamari.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good job right there.
Have both of you been there, correct?
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, many times.
Oh, yes.
How great is it? No menus.
You order off the chalkboard.
Order off the board. It's huge.
Everything is family style.
Huge portions.
Huge portions, right.
I mean, I remember having tiramisu there.
Yep.
I
don't have room for dessert anytime I go there.
You got to.
Yeah, but
yeah, it's a rookie mistake.
We ordered salmon, but they had salmon there.
Pasta.
Listen to this conversation. I'm not kidding. The filet was 2 pounds.
Yeah, that's true.
We ate it. I mean, you get the calamari, you get the Caesar salad.
Right.
Table of eight, you get three entrees, you get two desserts. You don't even actually spend that much money.
Right.
And enjoy each other's company for about 3 hours.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That's why it's a 3-hour wait to get into the doggone place.
And that's why I used to make my reservations 3 months in advance.
Yeah. Seriously. Carmine's, that would definitely be a place to hit this week. All right.
Yes.
I'll accede now to your football knowledge and tell me who you think is going to end up on top in this thing.
Well, I've always kind of favored defense, we know the history of these high-scoring teams. The seven teams previous to Denver that had scored 540 or more points, no Super Bowl wins amongst them. But I've seen something very interesting going on with the Broncos. And while they did score their 606 points this year, and their defense isn't very highly ranked, It's intriguing because I remember when the Colts and Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl in 2006, they were a different football team in the playoffs that year than they were during the regular season. And a lot of it had to do with running the football.
Yeah.
you know, their run defense was much better. I know Bob Sanders was a part of that. And I just find intriguing that the last four games, the Broncos have held their last four opponents to 17 points or less.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that might not seem like a big deal, but they did that once in their first 14 games of the regular season.
Okay.
And I think a lot of it is this 35-27 in ball control, 35-44 in ball control. They're playing keep away. And I think because of the limited opportunities Seattle can have on offense, I mean, I think Seattle's going to have to try to score. Well, hopefully they can score on defense. You know, the NFC teams haven't scored a lot in the playoffs. I don't know if anybody's realized. No, of the five NFC playoff games, no one put 30 on the board, winner or loser.
Yep, that's true. That's
and,
right. Yeah.
And then how peculiar is this? You look at the five games won by the NFC in the playoffs, and I'm just going to give you the winner's points. 26, 23, 23, 23, 23.
Wow.
Pretty consistent.
Yes, the Niners twice, and Seattle twice, and the Saints were the team that scored 26.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the Kansas City Chiefs scored 44 and lost the playoff game.
Right.
I'll tell you something about the difference in the conferences more than anything else.
So let me guess that you're siding with Seattle here.
No, I'm leaning Denver.
Really?
I'm actually leaning Denver.
Okay, and why?
I think there's an adjustment being made to their game plan. And I think the way they're executing, the fact that they're protecting Peyton Manning, and I still saw it last week with Seattle that was a little bothersome. And trust me, Russell Wilson did his best for Tarkenton last week.
Mm-hmm.
But that offensive line of the Seattle Seahawks didn't settle in all year. And Marshawn Lynch is the perfect running back for them to have because Marshawn Lynch gets a lot of yards on his own. You know, I've now seen Russell Wilson sacked four times in four of the last five games. And the one when he wasn't, he was sacked three times. And, again, his mobility and escapability were big factors in this game. And I'm going to throw out one guy to keep an eye on for the Denver Broncos on defense, and that's Terrence Knighton, the defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Who was a pickup almost hand selected by Jack Del Rio because he knew him from Jacksonville. I think he could be a real pain in the you know what for the interior of the Seattle line. I don't know what kind of game it's going to be, high scoring, low scoring, and so on. I just almost get the sense that people are going to be surprised that it could be lower scoring than you anticipated.
Right.
And the fact that it's going to be lower scoring is actually going to be in favor of Denver and not Seattle. I think people would think if it's a defensive struggle, lean Seattle. But you know what's a really interesting stat, and I'll leave you with this? You know the Denver Broncos and Seattle Seahawks gave up the exact same amount of rushing yards this season?
That's wow. Pretty weird.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird.
Both tied for seven.
I also know both of their states legalized pot.
You know, that was thrown out to me by who threw that out to me last night on a show I was doing. And so what do you say? That it's going to be high scoring because they're both going to come out smoking?
High scoring?
Oh, I like that one.
That's a really dubious stat.
Oh! Okay, got to get some rim shots in here. Kevin.
Well, just remember, the game is not played on paper and the game is not played with papers.
Another one.
And it won't be played on grass either.
Oh, there's another one.
And it won't be played at high noon.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, those are really bad. Yeah, exactly the point. Oh, my goodness. Russell, my friend, I hope the offseason goes by quickly because I can't wait to talk football with you again. You know? So thank you so much for taking the time with us each and every week to visit with us, visit with our football fans here, visit with our Patriots fans and followers. And I wish you nothing but continued success. I know that, you will continue to have it. So we will continue to find you at Cold Hard Football Facts, Pro Football Guru, Yahoo Sports, Bleacher Report. Where else can we find you?
Well, obviously, Bleacher Report and Pro Player Insiders and might be doing some podcasts there
good
soon, and I hope to make a big splash on Radio Row next week when I'm, you know, in New York and so on. And let me say, 13 years and counting, it's been fun. John, John, Eric, your whole show does a great job because the passion bleeds out on the airways, And for me, I have a lot of passion for what I do. And I'm so lucky that I get a chance to do it every week with people who respect my opinions and vice versa. And we always have good conversations. It's not, you know, it's not yelling, screaming, throwing darts. You know, Jane, you ignorant, you know what. It's not contrived. It's a good time. And that to me is always what sports talk is supposed to be about. It's not sports yell. It's not sports scream. It's sports talk. And fortunately, I've been able to do it with you, John, for more than a decade now. It's almost hard to believe.
Yeah, that is truly amazing.
It's not just sports talk. It's sports listen, too. That's
yeah,
a
it's
key part of it.
Sports listen.
Sports
yeah.
listen. That's also a very, very good
and
point.
Sports jokes and game show Thursday.
Oh, yes, yes. Can't wait all for right. more game show Thursday. There's no doubt about that.
Good afternoon.
John, you and I
my name is Russell.
In the match game.
What? Yes. You will yeah. make. You can make a return engagement in the match game next year, without a doubt.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. All right.
Absolutely. And here is your parting gift.
Okay.
Thank you again.
You got it. And here is
good
your
afternoon.
Here's your parting gift.
My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54. Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
Wow. What's that
I
from?
I told you, my daughter loves that. She knows it better than I do.
Are you in need of any assistance today, sir? We're always in need of your assistance, Russell Baxter. Thanks so much. Enjoy the Super Bowl. I know you will.
And enjoy Carmine's.
And Carmine's, yes.
Hey, I've got your address. I'll send you some leftovers.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Thanks, Russell.
Thanks,
be well,
guys.
My friend.
Have a great day.
All
take
right,
care,
you
Russell.
Too. Thank you. The one and only,
yeah.
Russell S. Baxter.
I'm going to have to bid you adieu as well. It's that time already.
I know. You got to go get stuff done. But we have one more, don't we?
Yeah, we
have
we
one
got
more thing.
We
have
one
more we can do.
We got one more left in the
okay.
tank.
Okay, one more we can do.
Unlike the Pats, we have one more left.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
Better make this a good one because we got to go an entire offseason
yeah.
without it again.
Well, John, we're only 2 days into the Super Bowl fortnight, and I am already sick and damn tired of Richard Sherman's stultiloquence.
Stultiloquence?
Yeah.
I have never heard that word. You had to reach in on the archives for that one, brother.
I wanted to make it a good one. I knew it was going to be the last one, and I didn't even know you were showing up today, so I had to reach back.
We always do a closing show.
But it caught me off guard a little
okay.
bit. I wasn't prepared, so I had to come up with it. And I kept seeing all these shots on TV, all the TVs that are on in the studio. All I'm seeing is this idiot, Richard Sherman, and the nonsense that's coming out of his mouth. And that's what stultiloquence is. Foolish, uninformed, idiotic speech and talk. And we're going to have 14
sounds
more
like
days
a,
of this.
Sounds like a typical day on POW in Progress.
You could say that, too. Yeah. But yeah,
stultiloquence.
So yeah,
throw that one by Andy. See what his reaction is.
Yeah, I don't think he'll have one.
He'll
be stultified.
Now that I've heard.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize that stultiloquence was.
It's kind of
similar to stultified.
Yeah, it's sort of the opposite of eloquence.
Yes. Which fits Andy to a T.
Yeah. Right.
We love you, Andy. We love you.
He does.
Yeah, he loves you too. All right, my friend. Thank you so much.
How about that? Does that work for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Stultiloquence is that's a good one that'll take us right into the off season for that one. I appreciate that.
And we'll pick up our stultiloquence on the playbook.
On the playbook in September.
Yeah, after Labor Day.
Absolutely. I'll see you around the stadium as
yes.
soccer season gets underway, and mm-hmm. we've got the draft to look forward to, which is actually moving a couple of weeks later this year.
It's
that'll
May
actually be early
8,
May.
9, 10.
Yep, early May this year rather than late April like it normally has been.
You're right.
So it'll be a little bit later on, but there will be OTAs to talk about. There'll be draft possibilities to talk about. And then before you know it, training camp will be around in the summer, and we'll get it running. But it's always a good time to have you in here. And
another season in the books.
And we'll look forward to the next one as well. All right, so that's Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. I want, before we take a break here, I want to kind of reset things for you just a moment because we've got, almost an hour left in the program. And haven't had a chance to speak to any of you because we've engaged in the conversation on not only what should have happened, what could have happened, what might happen still between Eric and between Russell and certainly with the game and everything this past weekend. But now it's time to talk to you because, number one, I need your thoughts on the game. this past Sunday, number one. Number two, do you have nitpicks? Because it is Nitpick Tuesday. It will always be Nitpick Tuesday on the playbook. So if you have them, you may share them. Number three, I want you to look ahead, and I want you in your best football knowledge mind sense here to come up with one move, a move, free agency, draft, otherwise, one move that will make this football team better for 2014. Now, my example to you was, I really think they should go and look for a wide receiver, someone that can go get a ball as opposed to someone who will wait on a ball to get to him. And that would help Tom Brady immensely as he enters the last two, three, four, we don't know for sure, but the twilight, shall we say, of his career. And we know that the window on his career is closing even further. And that will be a huge topic of conversation for next season. But before we get there, how can this team make itself better? Webradio@patriots.com. The email address, you know that, but I'll repeat it again. Webradio@patriots.com. Toll-free telephone line, 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500. Ace ticket hotline, 508-298-0398. And you've got social media now and for the rest of the offseason, @JRBroadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. Last chance to contribute to the program, last chance to converse here on the program for an entire offseason and to get your 2 cents worth in. Ready, set, and go.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest prices on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store. Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club story time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Again, hour number two, Patriots Playbook, putting a wraps to 2013. Want to do it with you. Would love to hear from as many of you as possible. Try to read all of the emails and the tweets that we can, take as many phone calls as we can up until we get done with the program at the top of the next hour. This is our final broadcast for the 2013 season anyway, and we'll anticipate being back again on Patriots.com radio right around the kickoff to 2014, which for us would ostensibly be the Wednesday after Labor Day. So if you want to mark your calendars, you can go ahead and do that. But in the meantime, great way to stay in touch. If you're not on board via social media, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is how you spell the last name, on Facebook, and we can still talk some football even in the off season or whatever else crosses your mind. That's what being friends and exchanging ideas and viewpoints is all about. All right, so let's get to the phones, and let's say hello to Lars in Stockholm, Sweden. Hello, Lars, you're in the playbook.
Hello, John, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, sir?
Thanks a lot for putting me on the air. I appreciate it.
Sure, I thank you for taking the time to call.
No. Well, I'm glad. I like your show a lot, to be honest.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So what are your thoughts today?
No problem. Well, you know, I like the season a lot. I saw a lot of very good games. I think we all saw a lot of very good games. And I think it's too bad for the players and the players who got injured this year. It was really a bad luck year, honestly. But you know, ultimately, it's the NFL today. If you lose your key players, you're just not going to win.
You know, that's obviously you're making a very, very good point, and one that I'm sure a lot of people would agree with you. You have a lot of key players that are down. It's just a simple numbers game. If the guys who are the next man up, and that was the philosophy, as you know, of course, over the last basically 8-10 weeks of this season, if the guys that were the next man up, if they were as good as the players that are replacing, they'd have been there in the first place, right?
Yeah, and you'd have a problem because all your top picks, you know, you'd be looking a little weird, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I'm not saying that to denigrate the guys who were there. They came in and did
absolutely
a fantastic
yeah.
job. But not everybody can be an NFL starter. Not everybody can be a potential all-pro player. I mean, every business, Lars, has to have, you know, the worker bees, right? And the Patriots had a team full of worker bees this year. It wasn't enough to get them over the hump against, you know, some of the elite players that they saw this last week against Denver. So, frankly, I don't have a bad taste. Some seasons I feel worse than I do right now, and I just don't feel bad about this because I'm looking at it from, you know, a glass half full point of view, and I really think that in spite of some of what my counterpart, Eric Scalavino, has said in the past, that anything short of a championship is a failure, I don't look at this season like that at all. I think this was tremendous. This was a tremendous season when you consider the big picture in its entirety with all the injuries and especially with the transformation, as we've talked about already even today, especially with the transformation that this team, that this franchise has had to undergo in the last 2 years from older to younger. I think for them to get to the Final Four in the NFL again is a tremendous accomplishment. And frankly, I'm chomping at the bit to get back at next season because I want to see this team now make some positive strides in the off season to build on this momentum. That's what I want to see.
Absolutely, and you know, the most important is to be able to get a shot at competing for the Super Bowl. You know, in the salary cap era, it's really hard to reach the Super Bowl. You're just gonna have years and years and year out where you're gonna have to get rid of players or you transition from coaches, and it's hard. But very excited, of course, for 2014. I do have one point though.
Sure.
A slightly nitpick is. I noticed, and Bill O'Brien did that too several times. You know when the decoy play on the third down, or can't remember which drive was it? Matthew Slater, he runs, you know, some kind of a fade route.
Yeah,
and I figured I don't mind the play, I don't mind it, but maybe you probably should have used somebody else because it's not the kind of play that would have fooled Denver secondary.
You know,
with that player I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, that was, I mentioned it earlier in this program, Lars, that I that was one of my nitpicks too. I mean, you know, that's all right. It was just that this was a Josh McDaniels play that we saw, unfortunately, too much of early in the year that I thought might have cost this team on a couple of occasions. And maybe they thought Slater would be the right person to use because Denver wouldn't, you know, or would be asleep on it. And clearly they were not. And I just thought a shorter route would have been better intended than, you know, trying to head up the sideline and I didn't like the play call. It didn't sit well with me, and I totally concur with you there.
Okay. Last question: Who do you see as from now on the Super Bowl champion? Any particular team that you like?
Well, I think probably twofold here. It's a two-part answer to it. Number one, I think I'm going to root for Denver. Number two, I think Seattle's going to win the game. Now, again, this is way, way early because we haven't gotten through any of the pomp and the circumstance or in the coverage of this game, and I really haven't had a chance to consider it much. I'll be honest with you, at least at this stage. But I think defense will probably end up winning out. Again, that's just my thought. But I certainly give Denver a great chance to win the game, and that's probably personally who I'll be rooting for because kind of been an AFC guy, so I think I'm going to stick with the AFC.
Yeah. I'm going to go with maybe Seattle because I like Russell Wilson. I think he's good for the game. You know, 5'11". I think it's good for the game. You know, not just 6'5".
And how about the fact that he seems to be a stand-up young guy? You know, a guy that, you know.
Very mature.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. The antithesis of Richard Sherman, sort of.
Yeah, he's a little, he gets carried away easily, yeah.
Yeah, just a little. And you know what? I don't mind it so much because, I mean, we've had characters like that in our past. I mean, you know, geez, Deion Sanders certainly comes to mind in the NFL, right? But he's over the top. He's over the top, and he's not as good an athlete as Deion Sanders was overall. Deion could do a lot of different things. Richard Sherman can do one thing, besides, you know, run his mouth, and he can cover a corner. But even he is not infallible because, you know, cover corner is the toughest position to play on a football field. There's no doubt in my mind. So I think Richard just needs to let his game do his talking for him, and I realize that's boring. But frankly, I think that would endear him to a lot of other people. And maybe that's not his shtick. That's fine. But I mean, you know what? All anybody wanted to talk about after the game was Richard Sherman in his interview on Fox with Aaron Andrews. And quite frankly, what about the other 52 guys in the team that just busted their tails to beat San Francisco? Nobody wanted to talk about them. Everybody's talking about Richard Sherman. Now, that's the ultimate act of selfishness as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he didn't have to bark at her also. I thought he was maybe a little too aggressive.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Okay, well, thanks, John, and see you next year then.
You got it. Thanks, Lars. Lars in Stockholm, Sweden. Thanks for calling in, Lars. Here's Harley in North Carolina. Harley, you're in the playbook.
Hey, sir, how you doing?
Good, Harley. How's it going?
I'm doing great. You know, my biggest nitpick to the game was, you know, I think we kind of lack firepower, and I think you're right. I think we need to go after a big receiver. I think, you know, if I could have anybody, I'd love to see us shoot Jimmy Graham a big offer and sign him. I think with him and Gronk together with the run game we got, we could really pound up people and
listen.
Set up a play action.
Harley, I would love that. I'd love to see them make a run at a guy like Graham. I think that would be, I mean, it'd be huge in a lot of different ways. I don't know that the Saints let him go. I don't know, though, what he's going to be asking for money-wise. But, you know, I did say any free agent, and so the sky's the limit on anybody. And I think Graham would be, you know, boy, I think you'd have what you used to have and then some when you had Aaron Hernandez. If you had Gronk, a healthy Gronk and Graham going with each other, man alive, I don't know how you stop him. But at the same time, though, just based on
unrealistic.
Yeah, based on history, I don't know that they – I don't think they're going to empty the bank for the guy.
How would you feel about, like, maybe trading Stephen Ridley for someone like a Bolden statue? Maybe give him Stephen Ridley maybe a fourth-round, third-round draft pick?
Well, you know, I'd come closer to doing that. But frankly, you know, I think the Patriots could also pick up a nice running back in the draft. I said a few weeks ago that I really like the kid Andre Williams from Boston College, who I think you can probably get in the second or even the third round. I'm not sure where they have him on the draft board right now because I haven't really started looking at it. But, you know, that's a guy that could bring you some of the speed and strength of a guy like Ridley and bring you the power that a guy like Blunt could bring you. And you might get it in one back. And plus, you're going to get fresh, young legs because he's a rookie. So, they've got three guys there. They may ultimately decide to do that. I will personally be surprised if LeGarrette Blount is back with this team because I think he's going to think that he's worth more because he took a cut to come to New England and he played for the $640,000 veteran minimum this year. And so I think he's going to go out and try to find his money. And I'm thinking the Patriots are going to say, all right, you go ahead and do that. You deserve that, but you're not going to get it here.
I have one more question before I go. It's a really quarterback-rich draft. Do you think that Brady's replacement, like we bring in somebody this year under Brady, like what we're in for the next couple of years?
Well, I would love to see, Harley, I'd love to see them do that. You know, I'm not sold and haven't been sold on Ryan Mallett since he got here. That doesn't mean he can't do it. I'm not sold on him. I'd love to see them take a shot at a guy like A.J. McCarron, who I think would actually be a Tom Brady clone almost, you know, in terms of, you know, his ability to manage a game with his arm strength, with his ability to move in the pocket, decision making, you know, what he can do with, you know, the right people that are put around him. I'd love to see him matriculate for 2 or 3 years, or let's say a couple of years under Brady, and then throw him in there and give him a shot. I think he would be the guy that could probably do that. I don't know that they invest in that in this offseason, but I think that that would be a move worth making. Maybe it's still too soon to do that. Maybe the Patriots are feeling like that, and maybe we see something like that done next year. But if they're going to go out and get a guy like that this year, then that tells you exactly what they're thinking, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. We'll just keep our fingers crossed, keep hoping for Jimmy Graham to land up here.
Hey, listen. I don't see it happening either, but I would actually love to see that happen. And frankly, you know, as I purported earlier in the show, I'd love to see them go out and get an Anquan Boldin type. Listen, if you told me that they're not going to get Boldin, but they're going to go get Graham, fine. Make the move. Do that. Because he's just as effective as a receiver as Gronk is. I'd have to look at his film to see what kind of a blocker he really is. But, you know, I think he's certainly, effective enough to where you put those two guys on bookends. And I don't know how you pick your poison if you're an opposing defense.
No, I'll make you better stop it.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Harley.
Thank you, sir. You have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Appreciate that. Martin in New Jersey. Martin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Good, Martin. How are you?
Good. I just got 2 points, you know. I think that the defense really needs to upgrade, you know, and get somebody like, you know, like a Greg Hardy or a Michael Johnson from Cincinnati. What do you think on that point, you know, as far as us rushing the passer? Because we get not enough pressure on, you know, opposing quarterbacks.
All right, repeat the first part of your question again because you broke up a little bit. I'm sorry.
I said I think we should go out and get somebody like, you know, like a Greg Hardy, which would be far-fetched because, you know, he's looking for a lot of money.
But, yeah, right.
You know, on the other hand, I think, you know, Michael Johnson from, you know, Cincinnati would be a really good pickup. What do you think about that?
I'd love it. I think that would be great. I'm still going to put my priority, my own personal priority, in trying to increase the weaponry that Tom has to throw to next
Absolutely.
Year. But Russell Baxter in the opening hour of the program brought up a great point that, you know, you do have to start planning now for Vince Wilfork's apparent departure or eventual departure anyway. And frankly, we don't even know if he's going to be healthy enough to come back and be the old Vince Wilfork next year. And that's got to be an issue that will be addressed in the offseason. So, you got to look at tackle. And I think the two guys you mentioned are more defensive ends, but at least you're putting pressure on somebody. I'd love to see them try to, you know, bring back Tommy Kelly too, if he's up for it, because I thought he was really good and very effective when he was in there. I'd like to see them consider bringing back Salinga, who I thought came in and did an admirable job filling in. I wouldn't even mind Sopoaga coming back and getting a look. I think all these guys should come back and let them just sort of sort through it and see who's left playing. I got to tell you also, Chris Jones. For a rookie free agent and Joe Villano, I mean, my goodness, those guys.
They were unbelievable.
Yes. And they were.
They held up.
Yes. And they were asked to do way more than they should have been asked to do. But the way that the injury situation played itself out, there was no other choice. But could you see those guys in a rotation on the defensive line and come in and just wreak absolute havoc when they only have to play like, you know, 15 to 20 snaps a game? I could.
I mean, I think that's what we need on defensive side, you know, to bolster that defensive line. But Chris Jones and the other guy did an amazing job this year. I can't commend them enough.
Yeah, that to me was a huge, huge silver lining in an otherwise, somewhat stormy cloud defensively all year was the play of those defensive linemen. You know, and I thought Chandler Jones had a very solid year. I thought Andre Carter late in the year came in and gave them some great minutes too, as much as he's capable. Jamie Collins and the way that he improved, you know, from, you know, a non-factor to, you know, a starter and a playmaker. Defensively, late in the year, he's got to have one of those starting slots next year, and I fully anticipate that happening for him. So, you know, and I'd love to see them keep the secondary intact. You know, Tlaib is the one guy that I think that they should try to re-sign as a free agent. There's no doubt in my mind. So, if I had to limit it to just free agents, Tlaib would be at the top of my list.
Absolutely, and the other thing I had to ask, I mean, Tom's been taking it on the chin for years now for this organization. You know, he's been keeping his mouth shut. He's been doing everything Belichick asked him to do. Why doesn't Coach Belichick just reward him and give him one stellar receiver? You know, granted the fact that he gave him Moss and Welker for those couple of years.
Amen, brother.
You know, like, come on, man. This guy's been busting his hump. And then I'm so sick and tired of, you know, like, Peyton getting these great weapons, and then Tom just goes out there with these lackluster receivers, and he still puts up, like, you know, a good fight. I just want him to see rewarded. You know what I mean?
Amen. Amen. From your lips to God's ears, so to speak. They should do that. They need to do that. They need to realize that, you know, you've got an effective weapon like that. You know, it's somebody that Tom can rely on because you didn't have Gronk. If you get Gronk back,
right.
You know, you bring Stephen Ridley, you know, and Shane Vereen back, and I really don't expect Blunt to be back. You know, so you can still run the ball. You got a, you know, super tight end. You can add a wide out to that mix along with your possession receivers. You know, you've got Edelman's another guy that I think they should spend some money on to come back as well.
Absolutely.
Based on what he gave you this year. If you have Edelman back and Amendola back, who's under contract, you find one more piece to that puzzle offensively. You're talking about, I don't know. I still think that you could approach 2007 numbers. I think
right. You
could get close.
And I think, well, I was listening before, if we can get Bolden, that'd absolutely put us over the top. And I do believe Tom's going to take these young receivers under his wing like he did with Edelman last summer. And I think he's just going to mold them into, you know, something magnificent. And I think that's going to be a very, very strong part of the game next year.
I think so. And I hope so. I just hope that, you know, at least in terms of, where I'm going with it, I hope that there's, you know, some agreement there on the coaching staff. Clearly they have their own agenda. Clearly they have their own vision, and they have their own way of doing things. And that's part of the fun of being a fan and part of the consternation of being a fan. You don't necessarily have to agree. You can certainly agree to disagree, but when the proof, comes out, you know, and they start playing football, this team is still competitive. It seems to me that it's going to take very, very little now for this team as it presently consists at the tail end of this year to push it over the top and actually find a way to get that fourth Super Bowl for Brady and Belichick. And I think that's really what any Patriots fan wants. And before he's done, before either one of them are done, and now's the time. It's carpe diem. There's two or three years left in this thing. Let's make it happen.
I hope we get it done, John. I appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks for the time. Let's also go to Jersey. Pawan is in Jersey. Hey, Pawan, you're in the playbook. You there?
Hello.
Hey, Pawan, how are you?
I'm good, John. Thank you.
Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, so since we need to pay Talib, we need to give Edelman some more money, and then I think we'll hit the cap for the next year.
Yep.
And, so how
would you do that, right?
Yeah, no. How good is Brandon Pettigrew? What do you think?
Brandon Pettigrew, I'm going to have to probably take a closer look at it before I give you any definitive decision. It's not a cop out, but I haven't had a chance really to consider a ton of free agents. I haven't had a chance to consider a ton of rookies. I haven't had a chance really to consider a lot just in the aftermath of the season. So I'm probably ill prepared to give you a breakdown on that one. But I would tell you that anything that can be seen as an improvement that won't break the bank, like you were talking about, needs to be done because the window is shrinking. So I'm hopeful that they'll take a look at it. I don't think that you'll see them pay a lot of money. I think that they'll probably limit some of that. And they have, believe, if I'm not mistaken, they can bring Talib back on the whatchamacallit. They can bring him back again, I think. A franchise on the tag. I think they can do that one more year. It wouldn't shock me to see them do that, but I guess a lot of it would depend on what that cap number will mean. And I don't know if they do that, how much that's going to leave for a guy like Edelman, and that really worries me because Edelman is also a free agent, and I think that that's a guy that has to deserve getting something. Certainly at least, more than what he was getting, which is, again, pretty close to the minimum. I think he was getting around $1 million a year.
Out of Talib, Edelman, and Blount, I think there'll be only two guys coming back, definitely. So, and the two tight end approach should be followed again. Gronk will be healthy, and then Brandon Pettigrew would be a good guy to match Gronk.
I will start paying attention to Pettigrew, and I'll see what you think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Good. So you're telling me then that Pettigrew is the one guy that you'd like to go after and get.
Yeah, I mean, if there is not a lot of money, I mean, I would like to see Bolden and Pettigrew, but yeah.
Yeah, well, you realize that you're probably going to be lucky if you can sign one, because you do have two others on your team that you do need to, that you should re-sign, and that's in Talib and in Edelman, right?
Yeah, and if we do that, and then it'll again be the same old rookie wide receivers. I mean, they'll be there in their second year next year, but
right.
Then, yeah, we'll end up with the same
right.
Receivers. Yeah.
Right. Sounds good. All right, Pawan. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, appreciate it, and thanks for taking the time to call. Here's our buddy Melvin in Tennessee. Melvin, you're up next in the playbook.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Melvin, how's it going?
Pretty good. First off, so I know I've been as active on this show as I normally been because I've had to do a lot of preparing and stuff for my boards here coming up here in May. But like I said, since this is the last show, I greatly appreciate it when I do go back and get a chance to listen to it once it's not live. But, you know,
right,
you guys do a fantastic job.
Well, thank you, Melvin. And as someone who's frequently contributed to the show, I appreciate your taking the time and especially listen to the show on the podcast, even if you can't do it live. And that's why we put the podcast option up there, because we know that it can't always be live. So I thank you for taking the time and following along.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Next year I'll probably get back on my normal schedule. It's been hectic this last little year, but this season has been a ride, of course. But I think just a couple of things that I'll never forget. It feels like to me that Kraft said at the end of the season last year when he said, "Well, we've got to improve our defense." And I know this team always thrives and stuff on the offense, but I still think there's a lot of changes need to be made with the defense. I think that it's a team that now has to put so much pressure on young players just because we missed on those picks so long. So we've put a lot of stock. You know, how many times here? Chandler Jones is going to have these picks. You know, I have to think and, you know, realize it. He's in his second year. I mean, his growing curve might be different from everybody else. So he still might be a good player, but he might not be that dominant to year four or whatever the issue is. And you know, you have to take those, take that growing pain with what it's worth. So I just feel like that, this team needs a lot. I think it needs a more dominant. It really needs that those dominant people on the outside. So much in the D line and the secondary. I don't know how many years McCourty's going to go into an offseason and they talk about how bad his secondary is. That would just irritate me like no other. I would want to make sure, you know, that the safeties need to improve. I feel comfortable with the corners. The corners feel pretty. You know, if you do resign to leave, I feel that they're confident enough that cover with right. them. You know, Jenner, yep. Ryan, and, you know. Arrington can, I don't know what to do say about him really, but he looked good at the beginning of the season and he just kind of feathered away kind of, you know, to as the season went on. But I think if you start there as far as getting some, you know, some pass rushers, some people on the rush that could get to the quarterback, that could be an outside linebacker. I mean, I feel like that could really work. You know, Peyton Manning for the part I saw for the game that I saw, you know, probably wouldn't even have to watch this jersey for the Super Bowl. He's rarely touched. I didn't see nobody getting there.
Right.
No, if you got to sit back there and let him have so much time to find somebody, I mean, people are going to get open, especially when your corners get out. So I just want to start on that side of the ball, getting somebody on defense that could provide some consistent pressure. We missed on Abraham here, so that little mistake could have cost you, you know.
Sure.
And that would be said, I would love to get a tight end. I've preached that for a long time. I would love to get a tight end. I thought this team was best. When it was going at the tight ends, it's accurate. It's showing great accuracy. There's somebody close to the ball. I would love to beef up and get another tight end if we get a chance. And all this stuff outside the numbers, it's good. I mean, it's not good, but it can be improved. But I'm the only one that feel like I feel like Dawson looked pretty good once he kind of later on during the season. I like to see what he does
once he figured out how to hold on to the ball.
Yeah, once he figured out how to hold him to the ball, he was okay.
Yeah.
He was all right.
Yeah.
That first couple games, goodness gracious, he almost made me cry.
Yeah.
Watching him out there play.
Right.
And it was embarrassing, too. Because
right.
That first Thursday night game, a lot of people were watching.
Mm-hmm.
They said, golly, who is that? He said, you all can't get a single pass. And, you know, you should have kept Welker. And all that stuff was going on, so. It was gone real, but at the end of the season, midway through the season, maybe the Steelers game really started looking good. So I'm out there, you know, catch some pass. And unfortunately, you've invested in Amendola, so I really don't know what that's going to be about. You got this young rookie receiver, and you got Heldman now that I think can really take care of that slot role. I mean, now he invested all his money in this West Welker replacement, and to be honest, I feel like the slot looked pretty good.
Right.
With Heldman being in that
business. It was.
So now, yeah, he was. So, I don't know. Like I said, that's just my thoughts for the season.
I think those are good thoughts, and I don't mind you're wanting to go out and get a tight end either. I think you clearly need one. You need something because you're not going to have. We don't think you're going to have Gronk back healthy. Certainly not for the start of the year. So you've got to go out and make a move. I loved the previous suggestion on the program to go out and make a run at a guy like Graham, but frankly, he's going to command way too high a price than the Patriots would be willing to pay. I think, especially when you realize that they've got other needs that they need to re-sign, you know, already on their roster. You can start with Tlaib and bring in Edelman after that. The thought process is, yeah, they should go out and do that. I think that there are a couple out there via the draft, as I'm starting to become familiar with some of them, that they might be able to turn to. They probably find a lower price free agent variety as well. But you're right. And that's my number one need for the offseason is I need some more weaponry for Tom. I want to see this team, you know, have a chance to be unstoppable again on offense like they were, you know, basically in 07. And even then, we know that they kind of stopped themselves. But I want to see that type of feel. I want to see a Denver Broncos-type offense back in New England next year because ultimately that's what, you know, they just had too many weapons for the Patriots to stop them this year.
All right. And if Tom Brady did that with so little weapons, I mean, of course, imagine what he can do if his, you know, second option in Austin College.
Right. Yeah. That's also true.
So, with that being said, I'll say one more point, then I'll get off. But it's crazy to me. I would jump for joy if they get Graham. But the chances that are being very slim. I think that also if I go back and think, I was like, where to leave? Well, I mean, Edelman and Amendola and, you know, Gronkowski. The Patriots have tied up a lot of money into some guys that have injury problems already.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, I don't know. You can't fix all that now. It feels like to me, and to be honest, you really need those two guys that you just mentioned.
Yeah, and I think the injury problem is gonna work itself out. They have to let these guys get healthy first and see what the prognosis is before they can really let that iron out. So that's why you need some time. And I perfectly believe, and frankly believe that. We may not have this done until camp gets ready to start in the summer. And that's going to take you through OTAs and mini camps and everything else in the spring and the draft and everything else. But they won't have a definitive answer on some of these guys who were hurt this year until about that time. So this is a process that's going to just be a long, long drawn out. Too long for probably you or I or anybody else, Melvin.
Right. And if, like I said, it was a good season, you know. For some odd reason, I think when I saw 31 laying on the ground, unfortunately, I can't sit up there. So I was like, I'm going to get this. It's over.
Yeah.
When I saw him on the ground, and, you know, dinner was already just banging up.
Yeah.
That was too much. I think they just had on the pregame social, you know, what player just cannot afford to get hurt during the game. That was the lead, so.
Yeah.
You know, after that, it was.
And we saw that happen. Yeah, we absolutely saw that happen. Melvin, thanks so much for the phone call, pal. It's no great problem. To hear from you again.
Uh-huh. Talk to you later.
You got it. Melvin in Tennessee. Dante in North Carolina. You're up next in the playbook. Hey, Dante.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good.
Yes, good. First of all, I'd like to tell you, man, what a good job you're doing, how you conversate with people and everything. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
But after watching the game, I hate to say it, man. We win nothing since Spygate, man. I know Bill Belichick, a smart coach, but if us as fans can look at the game and say what we need, how come we just can't go get it? I mean, I don't care what kind of system you got. If you don't have the players to play in that system, it's not going to work, man.
Well,
I mean, like you and the guy just said, we need some pass rushers. If you look at our defensive line, we sit there and pity-pat every time with one-on-one players. It don't take nobody to double-team nobody. We can't get no pressure. I could have played quarterback for Denver, man.
I'd like to have seen that.
I could have thrown it, sir. I'm telling you now, all that time he had back there, it's not going to do no good. You got seven defensive backs. So how many you got back there and can't get no pressure on the quarterback?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, after Talib,
well,
he had the game changed.
I think it was more frustrating this last week, Dante, only because, you know, Peyton had a shorter drop back. He had a quicker release. You know, he didn't really go upfield a tremendous amount. So they did that to lessen the Patriots' pressure. And I thought Denver's game plan was beautiful. It was perfect. They did exactly what they needed to do to win the game. So, I mean, there's a very fine line, and they walked it, and they survived it. To that end, where I think the Patriots were hurting in terms of their rush, I don't mind their end play. What they were hurting when they lost Wilfork and Kelly was their rush up the middle and collapsing a pocket and allowing linebackers and others to make plays. Now, if you can bring something back that's effective like that, those ends are going to have better production in terms of their sack and their pressures and their hurry numbers. So I think that that's one of the reasons why, you know, if you look at it from a tackle perspective as opposed to an end perspective, then you're going to see, well, you do have to start planning for Wilfork's eventual departure anyway. This was effective this last year because of the ends that we have, Chandler Jones in particular. So maybe if we, you know, do it this way by going the tackle route, we kill two birds with one stone. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. And we still need to work on our corners, but
you can never be happy with enough corners ever.
If this is a copycat league, we need to go get some. I mean, I felt sorry for Denard out there. He was eating him up there.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like a little baby, man. We need to get some bigger corners side to leave.
But didn't you see enough from Alphonso Dennard to know that if he's healthy, that the kid can play?
Yeah, he can play, but when it comes to size and jump balls, man, that's hard to stop.
Well, but jump balls, really, believe it or not, Dante, I think you find jump balls are the exception rather than the rule. There's only probably two or three times an entire game where a receiver and a defensive back are actually going to be in a jump ball situation for a pass. Because if you're a quarterback, you don't want a jump ball because that's 50-50.
Yeah, but from what I see in the NFL, when them jump balls go up in the air, who's going to come down with 9 times out of 10?
Well, but again, all I'm saying is you don't see that all that often in a game.
Yeah.
So that's why I think you're looking for guys that can cover as opposed to guys who are bigger. Now, if you can find a combination of the two, like Richard Sherman, hey, I'm all for it. Go do it.
Because it's like old boy doing them slants across the middle and stuff. Denard is covered up, man.
Yeah, right.
He was covered up.
Yeah.
And it's so much I can speak on that defense, man. Like you said, we need a rushing outside linebacker or a defensive end. I mean, those two could help us out and get a bigger corner, man.
And I think also a defensive tackle that can collapse a pocket.
Yes, yes. And all the offense on my, I think I'm just saying, Belichick, Kraft, and Screw Brady. He restructured his contract. Dag on it. Welcome, go. You get Amendola. Man, come on now. Let's do some tips now.
I'm gonna give you a lot of credit. You got passion.
I'm telling you the truth, man. Belichick, they screwed, and Brady so much of a system, man. You can tell he want to say some stuff, but he ain't gonna say it.
No, that's
that
true.
The man needs some help out there, man. I mean, go get your. You going to, man? It's been going on for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Since Randy Moss left.
Yeah.
You need a big 6'4", 6'5" guy can go upside that sideline, can do a threat. You got the middle.
Yep.
You got Edelman, a beast right there, man.
Well, that's why I'd love to see him go get Anquan Boldin, my own personal preference, because he'd be that kind of guy that can go get it.
Yeah, he attacked the ball, man. Man, I don't know what better to tell them boys. You need somebody with it. I'm hating to say it, like Khalid. He got some swag.
Yeah. He does.
You need somebody with some authority out there feeling comfortable to play, man.
Yeah, I agree.
And nothing, Belichick, he needs to show some compassion to his players a little bit. Bump all that, value all that. You're going to have to go out there and get some players, man, if you want to win a Super Bowl, man.
Can't.
Like I said, we ain't that sis dag on Spygate.
Right.
And that's leaving a damper. You got to go win something. Brady, man, he's winning his clothes. You got to get that boy some help, and you got to do that offensive line. I know it injuries on the offensive line.
Right, right.
But you need a big receiver and get a good, young, tall tight end. I forgot the head on the mock draft. I forgot that dude was, but he was like 6'6". You need somebody in there. You got Webb. Just get you another big.
Right.
You need a big receiver
right
on the outside, man.
I agree.
That he can heave that thing up the field for.
I think you're spot on, and you got a ton of passion for it, Dante. Thank you very much for the phone call.
Tell you what, John, if you look at the screener, you're big in North Carolina.
I know. We're huge in North Carolina today. What is up with this? Nick in North Carolina, you're up next in the playbook. Hey, Nick, you there?
Hello.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, hi, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for calling in.
Listen, I sent an email, but I'm also going to say I think we should go after Hakeem Nicks.
Okay, Hakeem Nicks. Yep. I think he was a name that we mentioned earlier here in the season, without a doubt. He'd be a guy that, you know, probably could be effective for you. I know he's had some injury problems in the past, but he certainly would, you know, improve your ability to go get a ball.
Yeah, it sounds like the Giants are not going to sign him. They say the starting is he can attend, meetings and sort of treatments and so on. It sounds like they moved on from him. I'm hoping he can do like a one-year deal like Talib did to prove himself, you know, after coming back from those injuries. And then after that, hoping for a long-term deal.
You know? Right. Yep. I agree. Well, that's what I hope. I mean, as far as Talib's concerned, I think they can franchise him one more year. And if they do that, then you obviously, you know, you're probably setting yourself up for the beginning to the end. I don't know that he would be around for another year after that. I don't even know that they want to do that. All I can say is that's an option. If they can't afford to do anything else, they can do that because the rules will allow them to do that.
I have a question. Can we cut Danny Amendola?
Why would you want to?
Because I don't think he was effective at all, and I don't see you know, yards after the catch. I don't see him being effective. I think Edelman is much stronger in that way. You know, really plays with much more heart.
Well, you could cut him, but then you're going to owe him for, you know, because he's under contract. So I don't know why you'd want to do that.
Yeah,
I think you got to give the guy a chance to produce if he can stay healthy enough to do it. That's the question more than anything else. I mean, you signed him. He's yours. And you're going to have to pay him one way or the other.
Well, I think we all can agree that it was a mistake. You know, we should have kept Welker and paid him the money. But,
Well, now, hold on just a second, Nick. They did offer Welker what ended up being perhaps a more lucrative contract. Welker chose to take the Denver offer. He made the choice, okay? It wasn't like they didn't offer him, then they didn't want him. They did want him. They tried to re-sign him. He actually took less money in the short term.
That is, you know, I agree with that analysis, but I just think Daniel Amendola hasn't lived up to what we expected from him. You know, even taking into account the injuries, he was not effective in this game at all. It's probably the biggest game in the season where we could go on to the Super Bowl, and he was not effective at all. And you know, for the amount of money he's being paid, you know.
Well, you're right. It is a push has come to shove time for him, and he does need to stay on the field. He needs to remain healthy, and he needs to show that he can be worth what they were paying him. I totally agree with you, 110% on that one. Let me get in a couple of, and thank you for the phone call. Let me get in a couple of emails here because so many of you have taken the time to write, and quite frankly, I'm not going to have time to get them all in. But I'm going to try to get in a few of them here. Brooklyn Matt says, what, pray tell, is an announcer to do when there's no longer a professional sports game to announce? What lengths will we see John go to when his precious playbook is closed for the year? What will John ever do with himself once his private Gillette Stadium announce booth is padlocked until summer? Well, it won't be entirely because there's soccer here. How far will John go to fit in just one more announcer fix? I can just see him now. How hard will it be for John to walk by a pickup basketball game and not ask complete strangers if he can announce the play-by-play? John, will that fill the hole? Or will it be so insatiable that you'll seek out anything to announce? A group of girls on the sidewalk with their double dutch jump rope aren't even safe. A strange man will beg them to let him announce the action. And it doesn't end there. A pair of 5-year-old boys shooting marbles will find an unshaven man in tattered clothes, hovering over their shoulders enthusiastically, calling every flip of the thumb and smack of the colorful marbles. It will come down to a point where a makeshift stickball game will be incessantly called from an unknown nut hanging out on a third-floor tenement window. The people will down the street will turn to each other and ask, who's that man? Why is he so happy doing that play-by-play? A collective light bulb will go off in their heads, and they'll say with an annoying smile, oh, that's right. It's the football off season. That must be that crazy Patriots guy trying to get his announcer fixed until they let him back in his booth. I hope he makes it. I hope so too, John. Thank you for everything you do for all of us. In all sincerity, your voice feels like family member. Thanks for streaming it into our homes. It's where you belong. Brooklyn Matt, that's well done. I would rather slam dance butt naked with a porcupine than go through that again. That's well done, Brooklyn Matt. And thank you very, very much for that. You made me laugh, dude. Robert in North Carolina, you're up next in the playbook.
How you doing, John? How's it going?
Good, Robert.
All right, well, you know, I think a big part of it, I mean, we got so far in the season. I mean, no one looking at, you know, week six, seven, no one thought we ever would have made, you know, AFC championship game at all.
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, Eric and all the fellas at PFW, they never would have thought, I mean, never would have even thought we would have gone that far. You know, they were talking all down on the team, all, you know, the Wookiees and all this stuff that we never got that far. Well, you know, we did get that far, and every game is individual, and we already had beat Denver. And I think we made a few strategic mistakes. I think the team didn't get there until, what, Friday? And you need a few days at least to acclimate. We should have gotten there at least Tuesday and started then and let those guys go out to some high school fields and practice and stuff because the defense looked spent after the first 5 minutes being on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way you can go to from, you know, sea level in Boston and living there to 5,000 feet elevation a mile up and not have any physiological effects. It's just basic science. I mean, you need more than a day or two to acclimate. I mean, these guys are athletes, but they're not, you know, Superman.
Right.
And the other thing, too, is the play call. We got to admit that Josh Daniels, I think he has seen his better days. There is no sense in abandoning the run, no sense in not creating plays to highlight our strong points. And you got LeGarrette Blount with four touchdowns the week before, and then this week, what, did he get 6 yards or something like that? I mean, it doesn't make sense. Denver's Rundy wasn't anything spectacular.
Right.
We beat stronger teams throughout the year.
Right.
There was nothing unique about them. No reason we shouldn't have won the game.
Right.
Their defense was subpar. You know, if you look at them, they were, you know, they're average, a little bit below average, and ours is average and a little bit above average. Actually, some of the guys had risen up, and we did actually excel and beat Denver in some of the categories through the season and have a good shot at it. And, you know, I think it was play calling, abandoning the run.
Yeah.
How do you go 1 week from 166 yards short touchdown?
Well, the game also, Robert, dictated that they had to abandon the run, and it's because Denver's game plan was to hold on to the ball and keep it out of Brady's hands. That's exactly what the Patriots should have done to Denver, and they couldn't do it. They had the first possession of the game. They went 3 and out. That was that was it. They had to hold on to the ball. And they had to keep it out of Peyton Manning's hands. So Denver did to them what they should have been doing in the first place, and that's how quickly the game turned right after the kickoff.
But I just think that Bill has given too much confidence and too much responsibility to McDaniels is calling some of these plays, and it isn't right. We need a little bit. You know, we do need work on the defense and stuff like that, and we do need weapons, but I mean, we've got one of the best backfields in the NFL. I mean,
we need more weapons to do what Josh really could do best, and that's take shots up the field. And that's the problem that I had with the play calling during the year. They're taking too many shots with people who are ill-prepared or ill-qualified to make those shots happen. That's my biggest problem. And if they go out and they can get players that can do these plays, then great. Then take your shot. Because you got a quarterback that can still get them the ball. They just didn't have it. And that's why I'm like, you guys, I mean, you got to adjust to the personnel. You can't expect the personnel to adjust to you. That's not your job. Your job is to adjust to the personnel you have, period. And I don't think they did a good enough job of that.
And when the best players that we have on the field are catching balls are Austin Kiley and Uvinawi, I mean, that speaks volumes right there to how far we need to go to get weapons in the offseason.
Right. Yeah.
All right, John. Have a good one. Appreciate the show. You're awesome, sir. We love you. Have a good one, sir.
Robert, thank you very much for taking the time to call. Appreciate that. Let me finish up with a couple of emails here. One on Facebook from Sean who says, tough loss, John, but overall I think the Patriots season was very successful with all they had to overcome to even get to the AFC Championship. My nitpick for the game, defense, not being able to get off the field. That was my number one nitpick. Hopefully this team can get everyone healthy back next year. I think if that happens, this team will be in great shape. As far as next year goes, I hope they bring Tlaib and Edelman back. Free agency, if that goes, I'd love to see New England make a run at Anquan Boldin and Jimmy Graham. Both players would raise the level of the offense immensely. Also, I'm thinking the Patriots should look at getting another safety to replace Gregory, maybe looking at replacing Kyle Torchman Harrington. Anyways, have a good one. Already looking forward to next year getting back into the playbook. Sean in Sacramento, California. Sean, thanks for taking the time to opine. Robin in Alaska says, overcoming injuries and making it to the AFC Championship aside, the biggest thing I'm thankful for this season is Brady running it in for a touchdown on Sunday. Without that run, I know we'd be hearing more about Tebow from our esteemed professor in Georgia. Oh, my. You'd have to have been a fan, I think, or a listener to the show a long time to get that was just a little inside dig. We love you, Big Al. We love you. We love your passion. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Garland says, so I was thinking of a way the Pats could fix their defense back issue, and why not retrain Slater? They could easily become your best defensive back. He's so talented. Do you know how Armstead is doing? Hopefully he's healthy next year. Ninkovich and Jones just don't get enough pressure on the QB. We need an impact player on the pass rush. Not sure about Armstead. That's been pretty quiet after he was deemed not physically able to play. Retrain Slater? That's a curious thought. You know, they certainly could do that in a pinch. I think they'll probably go after somebody, though, that probably has a little bit more, you know, training rather than trying to develop somebody, see if they can't get more immediate help, but it's an interesting thought. Matt from Germany. The nitpick for me were the battles on the line of scrimmage. The Patriots couldn't win them on both sides. Priority list for transactions in the offseason. One wide receiver. Go here for a veteran one in free agency who's big and can play on the outside. Two, it's defensive tackle. Wilfork and Kelly don't get younger. We don't know if Wilfork could come back after his surgery on the level he's played the last years. Three is the inside of our O-line, center and guard. We've seen that the Patriots had mostly problems with the inside rush, the non-block of Mankins, who doesn't get younger, on fourth and two. That's a good point. And he says, thanks for the show this season. Thank you, Matt. Terrence in Long Island, no disrespect to Tlaib. We need to save money and forego re-signing him. 2 years in a row on the bench in the championship game is not the kind of player we need to waste big money on. You know, that's an interesting thought. I'm surprised it's taken us this long to actually bring that point up. But here's a guy, you know, 2 years in a row, push comes to shove, wasn't around in the big game. Now, you or I or anybody else, if I had a rib sticking out, I'd want to be out there playing. I'm not saying that, you know, he didn't want to. I don't know. And we ultimately may never know. But knowing that teams game plan around him or game plan for him, or play devil's advocate here. Let's say Denver did want to take him out. Why would they devote that kind of attention to him? Because the man can play. That's why. To me, that's enough to think about bringing him back. I don't know what dollar you bring him back, but I think that's enough to bring him back. Jamie says, John, this would make the team so much better. Trade for Larry Fitz. Randy Moss-like production, but not the Randy Moss attitude. Great show. Shame it has to end. See you in September. Thank you. Appreciate that. It doesn't necessarily have to end, but this is the natural point. We've been doing it for 13 years. PFW, the Patriots Football Weekly guys, because of the magazine, they continue to publish in the offseason, so it stands to reason that their show should continue in the offseason to supplement the magazine, which they do, and they go to twice a week in the offseason mode, and when the season cooks up again and there's more football to talk about, then we add the playbook to the mix. It's that simple, because we deal clearly with a lot more of the game-to-game issues and previewing the upcoming opponents and things along that of that nature and things around the NFL as opposed to PFW, which they worry more about internal things in the organization and draft moves, free agency, OTAs, all that kind of stuff. So a little different style show, but that's why we bring it along, because we try to give, you know, different strokes for different folks out there. Thank you to everyone for your, you know, kind words throughout the season. And yes, thank you to everyone who had the criticism during the year as well. Just because that always, you know, makes us perk the ears up, see if we're doing what we should be doing. And what we should be doing here is creating dialogue and creating conversation. There is no real right or wrong. Sometimes maybe you are or I am misinformed or uninformed, and that does happen from time to time because there's so much that's out there. But the bottom line here is that we talk football. We talk about ostensibly your favorite team or what we think is your favorite team or certainly a team that you like to follow, even if you are a fan of an opposing team that listens into the playbook from time to time. We're glad to have you, and I hope that you're here because you know that we talk football. This isn't necessarily a rah-rah, pom-pom type of thing, although we love to see the Patriots win because, yeah, it makes things more interesting. It makes things more fun. You know, there's an old saying, you root for the paycheck. And that's partly it, because the better the team does, you think, well, maybe you have a chance to do good as well. And I think we all kind of feel like that. So thank you for all of you who have sent in your emails, your tweets, your phone calls, your messages on Facebook, everything. And again, feel free to stay in touch in the offseason. I'm not going anywhere. At JR Broadcaster, that's the Twitter handle. Thanks for all of the new followers this year. I hope we find a few more in the offseason. And John.Rook on Facebook, become a friend, and we can still talk some football from time to time and check in with each other on how things are going, especially in all the offseason moves. And then the plan, of course, would be to bring it back again next September once we get around to Labor Day and training camp. And Kevin Collins, thank you, sir, for all of your great work producing the program.
It was an honor, sir.
It's always fun. You make it fun, and you guys make it fun as well. So until we have a chance to speak again in this venue, happy trails. Enjoy the Super Bowl, even if the Patriots aren't in it. I know you will. It's still football. Make the best of it, will you? We will. Talk again.
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you. Till we meet.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.